Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, July 9th, 2017. This is episode 1403. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by the Ring video doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your house. Go to ring.com/techguy and get up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk tech, computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, augmented reality, virtual reality, real reality. Love that joke. Hey, I'm cracking myself up. That's better than nothing. This is the show where anything with a chip in it, we will talk about. Self-driving cars, electric cars. I saw an interesting article that said that we are renewable energy will become cheaper than gasoline in the next, say, 5 or 6 years, just because of the widespread use of it, improvements in the technology. I think we're going to be driving electric cars pretty soon. On Friday, Tesla launched its first kind of affordable Tesla. In the past, they've been very expensive, in most cases approaching $100,000 for a car. The new Model 3, I think, starts at $35,000. Still not cheap, but it's, you know, kind of mid-range. What's been keeping cars so expensive is the cost of batteries. These Teslas, especially because they have a lot of range, 200 miles plus in many cases, have a ton of batteries. They're all in the chassis. They're just sitting underneath the car, which is probably a good place to put them because it kind of gives the car some stability and it kind of keeps them out of your way. But the price of these batteries is dropping considerably. And so, and this was interesting because if you look back, Elon Musk, the man who started Tesla, is an interesting character. Boy, is he a fascinating character. A friend of mine named Ashley Vance wrote a good book about him, which I'd recommend. The story of Elon Musk. He was born in South Africa, came as a child to the United States. Still has a little bit of a South African accent. His parents struggled. I think he was a single mom, but he fell in love with computers. This story has been told over and over and over again in Silicon Valley. Fell in love with computers, kind of started playing with them. Eventually, founded a little company you may know called PayPal. Elon is one of, they call them the PayPal Mafia. I think he grew up in Canada and then came to the United States. He founded a company called X.com, which merged with another financial company called Cofinity, and together they called themselves PayPal. Made a little money, little bit of money on the PayPal thing. And this, I always admire him for this. Instead of, just as I would have done, retired to a beach house and enjoyed the rest of my life without working, he decided he didn't want to do that. He didn't want to sit still. He wasn't interested in taking it easy. So he sank, let's see, PayPal was acquired by eBay in 2002. Elon, out of that, made $165 million. He was the largest shareholder in PayPal. $165 million. Now, he didn't just take it easy. He had always been interested in space exploration. In fact, he even then wanted to go to Mars. He's founded a company called SpaceX. And you've seen the amazing things SpaceX is doing. They just launched this month, I think, their third communications satellite on SpaceX rockets. Rockets, which he's figured out a way, or his team has figured out a way to land after, you know, normally when you launch a rocket into space, you just throw away the launch unit. just into the sea. He's figured out a way to bring them back to Earth and land. It's quite an amazing thing to see. So we put $100 million of that early windfall into SpaceX. Then he also decided, well, I think I want to do electric cars too. Because, and I he says, and I believe him, he wants to save the Earth. He says, you know, we're polluting it to death. We want to create an economy where electric cars make sense. So in 2003, he put the rest of his money into Tesla. And the plan, if you read his early plans, which he was very public about, was to build a very expensive car. Actually, his first car was based on a Lotus body. It just had an electric engine. That was the Roadster. And then he made the Model S, very expensive luxury car. He said, because I want the people who buy this car to fund the development of a affordable car. And now, on Friday, that dream kind of realized after the Model S and the Model X, he did the Model 3, which some people say really should have been the Model E, because then he could have S, E, and X, and then apparently the next generation will be Y. I'm not kidding you. He's playful. He's a playful fella. People today, even to this day, say, oh, Tesla's overvalued, valued it more than any of the big three, by the way, the General Motors or Ford. He said, oh, they're overvalued. I don't know. Maybe they are. I'm not a stock investor, but I'm a proud Tesla owner. And I'm very – and then he built in he built this giant factory, the Gigafactory. To the idea being that if we can make these batteries, we can reduce the cost of them. They had been buying them from Japan, from Panasonic. So Panasonic and he teamed up to make the Gigafactory in Nevada. It's the biggest factory floor in the world. It's huge. And then that wasn't all, though. I mean, he's also got a new company called The Boring Company, which is far from boring. Do you know about The Boring Company? He got tired. He driving from the offices of SpaceX to Tesla. The commute was so terrible in Southern California. He said, there's got to be a better way. What if we bored tunnels and I could drive in a tunnel? The Boring Company is, he thought of this a year ago. He tweeted, am going to build a tunnel boring machine and just start digging. Great name, The Boring Company. First tunnel already, I think they've already broken ground, is on the SpaceX campus. It'll probably just go to a parking garage, but they're already talking with the California Department of Transportation to request permits to dig a big tunnel under L.A. They started on the SpaceX campus because they didn't need the permits, and he's building boring machines. This is the stuff of comic books. This is the stuff of movies, right? But we're lucky, I think, to live in a time where a guy like Elon Musk can have a dream and build it. He wants to put us in Mars by the year 2040. He says, we will be on Mars. We will. Because he's going to do it. I'm not waiting for NASA. Although NASA loves SpaceX and all of these others. You know, this is the thing to do if you're a billionaire these days. Jeff Bezos, the founder of Amazon, also has his own space company. Used to build giant yachts, you know. Sail around, see who has the biggest yacht. Now they build rockets and space vehicles. But that's great. I love that. Anyway, congratulations to Elon Musk. Model 3, first, and he tweeted it, by the way, something like 30,000 retweets last time I checked. He tweeted a picture of the Model 3 on Friday, the first Model 3 to come off the line. They're made in Fremont, California, down here in the old NUMMI plant, which was a joint venture between, that was where they made the Saturns, right? It was a joint venture between, was it Toyota? And GM, yeah. And they made the Saturns there. And then they stopped making the Saturns. Elon bought it. He's not, and by the way, it's a big plant. And I went down there and toured it when I picked up my Model X. And they were just starting to expand to build the Model 3 production line. There's a lot more capacity there. And he's going to need it. Because he has enough orders for Model 3s. People put down $1,000, more than 100,000 orders for the Model 3. Enough orders to keep that factory busy for the next few years. So if you're thinking, I think I'll go down to the dealership and pick up a Model 3, you might be waiting until 2020 at this point. They say they'll be able to make 100,000 next year. We'll see. Pretty amazing stuff. Congratulations to Elon Musk. I believe in you. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. If you've got a question, a comment, a suggestion, you want to talk high tech, 888-827-5536. We'll go to the phones next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're trying to play only hot songs. I love this song. Don't you love this song, Kim Schaffer?
I love this song.
Oh, it's so hot. It's so hot in Southern California right now. So how hot is it, Leo? I don't know. It got to inland areas, got it well over 100 degrees, right? How hot is it now? We got Doug and Ann visiting from El Dorado Hills. How hot is it right now?
It's gonna look to see where it is now.
Yeah. It was 106 in El Dorado Hills yesterday. Holy cow.
It's 92 right now.
Oh, 92. It's nothing. Oh, right now. It is morning still, isn't it? 112 in Palmdale yesterday. Just heating up. Record high temperatures in the Southland. So we're going to try to stay cool with some cool music. Kim Schaffer is here. She's answering the phones. Hello, Kim.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My car said 108 on Friday.
Wow.
So it was pretty warm in San Rafael.
Wow. Murrieta was 115 yesterday.
Miserable.
Yeah, I think we were breaking 40-year records. So
just
it's a
put me by a pool and I'll be fine.
I asked Michael Cozio, our musical director, to fire up some summertime music. I love that one.
Yep.
That was a good one. Riding around town with the windows down. So, Kim, you've been here slaving over a hot phone.
Yep.
Even in this weather. I'm so impressed.
It's very air-conditioned in here. It's okay.
We keep it really cold in the studio.
A balmy 62.
Yeah, because you don't want to see me sweat. That's an unpleasant thing. So we keep it pretty cold in here.
Yeah.
I'm sorry about that. You and Heather often wear blankets when you come to work.
Yeah, I see her with scarves all the time.
Yeah,
I try to tough it out.
My apologies. My apologies. But you have been working on the phone, and you have come up with some wonderful callers, I'm sure.
Yeah, Corey in Altadena wants to help his dad with his phone and transferring information, and he just doesn't know how to go about that.
Okay. We get this one a lot, I think. Common question. Hi, Corey. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, hello?
Hello, Corey. Welcome to the show.
Hey. Thanks for taking the call. I listen to you forever and ever, and this is my first call. And, of course, it's not for me. It's for my dad, who's got a Samsung Galaxy S5, and he's asking me, what can I do to get a couple photographs off here? And I got some contacts on there. I have to write them down because I'm going to transfer to a new phone and stuff. And it's like, well, I think there's a way to transfer these digitally.
Well, there one good thing is in the Android space now, and I think Apple does this too. It's a little easier if you stay in the Apple ecosystem. But with Android, because there's different manufacturers, almost all the Android phones now have this. When you start the new phone, it says, are you transferring data from the old phone? And if you say yes, and I think this will work with an S5, you tap the backs of the phones together. It goes bloop. You have to approve it on the S5, and then all that stuff will be transferred over to the new phone. However...
Okay.
So that is the easiest way to do it. However,
he's back.
Go ahead.
He's actually going to another Samsung necessarily. He wants to get it onto the computer.
Yeah, that's the he wants to get it on the computer. Okay, that's a different matter.
Maybe even into the cloud is not a bad idea, too, because he's going to get a new phone sometime.
That's what I would do. So getting it to the computer is as easy as getting a USB cable. And on Windows, it should just recognize it. On the Macintosh, you have to download the Android transfer program, Android file transfer, but it's not a big deal. And then you can just, it shows up as a hard drive. It shows up, mounts on the desktop and you just copy whatever you want, which can include photos, ringtones. I don't know, text messages may not show up in a text file, but almost all the data that you have should show up. Now, the other way to do it, which is exactly what you're talking about, and is the way I recommend, is use the cloud. Android is a Google product, and so there's very good integration with Google services. If he doesn't already have a Google account, most people do. If you just sign up for Gmail or any of those Google services, you'll create a Google account. There's one account for all the Google services. Log in on the phone, add your Google account, and your calendar, I wouldn't be surprised if this already happened. It's kind of the way most Android phones work. Your calendar your contacts will automatically be synchronized with Google Calendar. So you go to calendar.google.com, you should see all your calendar items. You go to contacts.google.com, you should see all your contacts. You do the same thing with photos. If you download the Google Photos app, which is free, it offers free unlimited storage for all the photos on your phone. In fact, I use that because I have different phones, many different phones. I'm always trying out phones. And I want to keep a copy of all the photos I take on all the phones. So there's a setting in Google Photos. It's not on by default, but if you turn it on, it will automatically copy everything you do, photos and video. We'll copy it up to the Google Cloud, where it'll be available if you go to photos.google.com. There's a lot of other reasons to do that. It's backup, but Google Photos has some very nice features, including highly sophisticated search capabilities. So you can say, I want all the pictures that I took in El Dorado. I tried this and it worked. I want all the pictures I took of snow in Paris. I was there one Christmas and they all popped up. You can say, show me all my dog pictures, and all your dog pictures will show up with, you know, an occasional bear or raccoon or kitty cat thrown in, depending on what you take pictures of. It's not perfect, but it's good enough that I no longer feel like I have to do a whole lot of categorizing. Yeah, I just let Google do it. Let go and let Google is our motto. It's a little sacrilegious, but I like it. And the other thing they've just added, and I tried it and I really like it, you can say, I want to make a photo book. So if you take a trip, let's say you take a trip to Altadena, take a lot of pictures, and you come back, you can make an album of all your Altadena pictures and then say, I want a photo book, and it will go through them. And it will pick the artificial intelligence, the machine learning will pick what it considers the best photos. Now, sometimes they're not, but oftentimes they are. They eliminate things that are out of focus or blurry or, you know, there's nothing of interest in them. They tend to favor pictures of people. So I took a lot of pictures on our last vacation. Some are of people, but a lot of the pictures I want were of monuments and things. And it didn't take a lot of those. So I have put some, you can move it around. You press print, the photo books are fairly affordable, and a week or two later, you get a nice book. And I have to say, it was the easiest. Apple does this. Everybody does this. This is nothing new, but it's new for Google, and I think it's a very nice feature. And I particularly like the artificial intelligence. Google says, for most people, the biggest pain is after you take the pictures, organizing them, sorting through them, getting rid of the bad ones. And then go and you want to make a book where you got to pick it. And they say, we want to just automate that whole process for you. And they do a pretty good job. So photos, if you want to do music, Google also has a music feature. So you can take any music that's on your phone and copy it up there. And then when you get a new phone, especially if it's an Android phone, although it works fine with an Apple phone as well, you just log in. When you first set up the phone, you log into your Google account. And lo and behold, it all synchronizes and everything's there again. Your phone numbers, your appointments, your photos, it's all there again, which is great. If you're Samsung and you go to Samsung, Samsung has its own, as one would expect. I don't know why they do this, but all the companies that make phones and use Android duplicate Google's efforts because they want to have something, you know, special. Samsung does not as good a job, but they have a similar thing with a Samsung account. So if he's going to get another Samsung phone, doesn't sound like he is, but if he were, you could just log into the Samsung account and click in the settings, click backup everything, and it would do it too. I like to let Google do it because everybody supports Google, including iOS, including Apple. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More to come right after this. It's 90 in LA. It's 70 here. And it's 62 in the studio. No, it's 71 in the studio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. I got in the mail. I think this is kind of cool. I've seen these at airports. Maybe you've seen them too. The fuel rod station. So how often you get to the airport and the phone is dead and you'd like to charge it up. And I've seen these kiosks. Actually, they're really like vending machines. Called portable device chargers, power ready to go. They're pre-charged little batteries, and they come with all the cables for. They don't have Type C. They really got to work on that. But they've got micro USB and both the Apple 30-pin and the Lightning charge. And you just plug into that and you charge it up. And then the thing I really like is the next time you're at the airport, and this is all emptied out, although you can recharge it. But if you've got it at the airport, you can swap it for free for a new one. So you carry this with you, and you always... Now, the only negative on this, and this is something that's not immediately obvious on the kiosk, so I just want to pass this along to you. It's 2,600 milliamp hours. So it's not a huge battery. That would charge an iPhone fully, probably. I think the iPhone is around that. But a lot of other phones are 3,000 or more milliamp hours. So you wouldn't necessarily get a full charge, but you'd certainly get enough of a charge to use the phone. And don't expect to charge a laptop or anything else. They say they're going to put USB-C adapters in the kit soon. And, of course, you can request one from customer service or bring your own. It's got a Type-A USB plug on the back there, so you can plug any cable into it to charge. And then it has a micro USB for charging it up. $20. It's called Fuel Rod. I've seen these every time I go to the airport, and I've wondered, is this a good idea? So now I know. Yeah, just understand it's not going to give you 100% power. It's 2,600 milliamp hours. But I love the idea that you don't throw these in landfill. You just swap them when you get to the airport, and you can get a new one for free. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. We're taking your calls, and we're continuing on with James in San Francisco. Hi, James.
Good morning, Leo. A while back, you mentioned to a caller who'd bought an Apple, I think it was an iPad from eBay, and it had gone bad, that an Apple product is not refurbished unless it's refurbished by Apple. Now, there's a site that used to advertise with you, I believe. May I mention their name?
Yeah.
Gazelle.
Oh, yeah, of course. They were an advertiser on many of our podcasts. That's right.
So I'm guessing that the same dictum applies to them as well. But how reliable would it be to get a refurbished Apple, so-called refurbished Apple device from Gazelle?
I've never had any problems, and we have done it. We also sell all of our old phones. As you imagine, I generate quite a few secondhand devices in the process of, because I buy everything I review. I don't take loaners from companies, so if I can avoid it. So I buy iPhones and iPads on a pretty regular basis, not only for myself, but for my staff. When we're done with them, we send them to Gazelle. In fact, we're sending a bunch over to Gazelle right now. You know, that's a very good question.
Could you just send them to me?
Yeah, really. You're not the only one, baby. A lot of people. What do you do with those old iPads, Leo? We get our money back. That's what we do. That's a little different. First of all, you know, when you buy it from somebody on eBay, yeah, who knows who that person is? Refurbished, right. Who knows who did the refurbishing? At least with Gazelle, they offer I think it's 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you get it and it doesn't charge or whatever, you can get your money back. They're a legit company that's around. It's been around for a long time. In fact, they were acquired, that must have been about a year ago, by Coinstar. So those are the folks that you see them in the grocery stores that take your change and turn them
I've
into
used
money.
Them. I've
yeah.
used them.
So Coinstar, my guess is that what Coinstar is going to do with Gazelle is put little booths in malls and other public places so you don't have to mail stuff in. You just bring it in and they give you cash on the spot. I would have no hesitation. Again, they're a sponsor, so disclaimer there. But I would have no hesitation buying a refurb from them. But you understand what you're getting. You're getting a used device. They guarantee it works and you can't get your money back. So I think that's a little safer than buying it from eBay.
And if the item works for the first 30 days, it most likely it's going to be good to go, right?
Generally, that's true. The thing is, if you're going to do that, you want to kind of stress it in those first 30 days.
For instance,
charge it all the way up, discharge it, charge it all the way up. Check the Apple has a little battery setting in the settings. You can see how good the battery is. You want to look at that and see if the battery's, you know, how much deplete, you know, how worn out it is. Batteries, you know, all these lithium-ion batteries have limited lifespans. They wear out after typically 500 charges, but it varies on the battery. Anything used is gonna have used up some of that cycle. So you want to kind of know how much. You can look in the battery settings. This is nice, actually, that Apple and Android have both done this, that can show kind of the status of the battery.
Okay.
And I think that's a useful thing to do as well.
One more quick question.
Sure.
So for all these Apple devices that have the soldered-in batteries, is it approximately $100 to have the Apple Store take care of a new one?
Yeah, last time I checked, it was I think $90. I think it's gone up since then, but yeah, it's around that. And only Apple can do that. I mean, if you look at an iPhone these days, how would you even get into it? There's no screws. There's no seams. They have some magical way of doing it. In fact, I'm told they have special tools and machines in the back of Apple stores that are designed to do that kind of thing. So only Apple can replace it, really. I mean, I guess there's other people that can. But
I appreciate it, Leo.
Yeah, my pleasure. Yeah, that's a very legitimate question. I mean, in general, I always say get refurbed items from the manufacturer. That's the safest thing to do. But there is a good reason to buy it. I mean, used phone. There's a lot of, you save a lot more money. And I have to say, when you get it from Apple, you're not going to save a lot of money on a refurb. Typically, when you buy refurbs from Apple, they're not really highly used. What they are almost always is open box items. So the law changed in California. For a while, computer companies and other companies were selling, if I sold you a computer, you opened it, looked at it, maybe even turned it on and said, that's not for me, and returned it. They were sealing those up in new packaging and selling them as new. And California said, you can't do that. Those are not new. So companies, and California sets the stage for, you know, the rest of the country, because you can't sell in California, you know, that's a big market. So almost all electronics companies now, what they do if they get an open return is they sell it now as a refurb. So if you go to Dell's outlet or Apple's outlet, almost always, especially if you're buying, you know, this year's model, that's what you're getting. Barely used, maybe not even ever turned on. Apple gets it back. They check it. They make sure it works. They make sure it's up to spec. They warranty it, and that's a big deal. And then they put it in new packaging. But they can't sell it as new, according to the law. So I think that's a chance to save a little money. But understand, neither Dell nor Apple gives you a big discount on their outlets. It's worth checking. Because in my opinion, if you're buying a current model of something, you're getting something that probably was never used or barely used. It was returned quickly. And so there's not a lot of refurbishing involved. They just have to check to make sure it's okay. When you're buying from somewhere like Gazelle or eBay, then that's a very different situation. At Gazelle, you're probably buying a phone that's been used for a few years. In fact, if you look at what they're selling, they're pretty much selling the last version of the phones. Or last but two versions of the phone. And so those have been used. They're not unused. They even say this. In fact, they offer you different levels, you know, like new, slightly used, kind of beat up but functional, that kind of thing. And you save commensurately. I don't have a problem buying that from a reputable vendor like that. Somebody that you can go back to and say, I want my money back. 30 days is a little short. That's, again, for the best results, go to the manufacturer and you want the full manufacturer's warranty, just as if you were buying it new. Then you're in good shape. Buying it from eBay, anything from eBay, always makes me nervous. I have bought things from eBay, and I've been ripped off. So that always makes me just a little bit nervous. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. We can talk about it. If you disagree, let me know. Website, techguylabs.com, techguylabs.com. We're going to have a visit from Chris Marquardt in about an hour. He's our photo guy, and I'll take more of your calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number, and we're talking high tech as we always do this time of the week. I'm glad you're here. Jason's on the line from Chino, California. Hi, Jason.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
It is very hot out here.
How hot is it?
Pushing like almost 100 where I'm looking at.
Oh,
I don't know why.
Man. But it's a dry heat, right?
Not really.
You're not really dry. Well, Jason, go somewhere cool. Go to a movie or something. Take it easy. Don't.
That's cold beer.
Yeah, there you go. What can I do for you today?
Multi-regional DVD player. I've had a couple issues. Trying to find a better brand, and so I heard you had mentioned it once, but between Blu-ray, regular, and capability,
yeah. So this
player.
This is a requirement of the movie industry. They, and I have a feeling this is going to go away at some point. because they're starting to release movies globally on the same day. But for a long time, you know, Iron Man would come out in the U.S. on July 15th, but it wouldn't come out in the Philippines until, August 40th or whatever. And which means never, I guess. So I should make it September 4th. And so what they're afraid of is that you'll buy the Blu-ray in the U.S. and then ship it to the Philippines, and they can all see the movie before it's released in the theaters. And, you know, I think this is slowly changing as movie companies realize that the source of revenue isn't just the ticket sales on the first weekend. They still, care a lot about that first weekend ticket sales. But you're starting to see global same-day release. I don't know. I mean, maybe they'll give this up. Anyway, the way they did to protect this is with region encoding. And so when you get a DVD player, the first time, if it's unlocked to begin with, the first time you play a DVD, it will say, what region are you? And then you will say, I'm region one. I'm in the U.S. They may not even say region. They'll say, what country is this? Or they may just go online and figure it out. And at that point, they'll lock the DVD player, and you won't be able to play any movies from any other regions ever again. And so this is it's a form of copy protection. Region 1 is the U.S., Canada, and Bermuda. Region 2 is Japan, Europe, South Africa, the Middle East, and Egypt. Region 3 is Southeast Asia, East Asia, and Hong Kong. Region 4, Oceania and the Caribbean. And Central America and South America. So they're pretty broad regions. There's also the issues of compatibility. There's NTSC, which we use in the United States. I think Japan still uses NTSC, maybe not. And then most of the rest of the world uses PAL. These are different ways of encoding the video. And so an NTSC DVD will not play in a PAL player and vice versa. They make players that are multi-regions, as you point out. Samsung makes these, and Toshiba makes them. I'd feel very comfortable with either of those companies. They're good, they're good companies. I'm surprised they're allowed to do that. Blu-ray is a different matter because the movie industry, realizing that they kind of blew it with DVDs, they made it too easy to copy DVDs, decided to really lock down the Blu-ray. And I wonder, let me just see if I can get region-free Blu-ray players. Yeah, Samsung even offers it. All right. I would feel very comfortable. Samsung, you can get this on Amazon. Multi-region. Free zone Blu-ray DVD player, $179. That seems fair. I'm going to check, though, because does this player stay region-free even after software firmware updates? Yes. Yes, so that's a good thing. I don't know. I guess maybe the movie industry just decided to not enforce this. I don't know what happened. So good news. Samsung is a very reliable name. Obviously, they make very good Blu-ray players. I'd have no problem with buying that one. Harvey online from Pahrump. Hey, Harvey.
Hello.
I hear you, great Harvey.
Okay, great. Last week, Leo, a fellow called up and complained that he has trouble when watching full-length motion pictures on his just ordinary stereo TV, that the dialogue is hard to hear.
Yeah.
And you correctly told him that because when they make the movies, they mix the sound for 5.1 or 7.1 stereo, which he did not have. And you said if he buys a sound bar and connects that to his stereo output, he won't have that problem. Well, my question is, my wife went out without me, and she bought one of these new so-called smart TVs.
Uh-huh.
It didn't have any analog audio out at all. It had the little digital, optical, whatever.
Most soundbars now, fortunately, have optical in because of that.
They do. I wish I had any idea. I wouldn't have. I bought this JTEC thing for $60 or $40. So my question is, if I hook the output of the JTEC to a sound bar, will the problem be solved, or it has to be directly to a TV?
So the JTEC is what? What does that do?
Okay, it converts the digital optical audio.
Oh, you got a little converter box.
Yeah, from the TV to just plain old analog audio, which I'm very happy with.
Okay, so you don't have a soundbar that handles optical in other words.
No, I don't have any soundbar at all because I didn't know they did that.
Oh, yeah. Well, the reason they do that, of course, is because these high-def TVs are digital. All digital. You get HDMI in. That's a digital connection to your DVD player, your cable box, or whatever. That carries a digital version of the picture and digital audio.
Right.
So the TV generally says, well, I see no reason to convert this to analog. They used to have headphone jacks. That would be a digital to analog conversion. But Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guy, says they're stopping. They don't even do that anymore in a lot of TVs. So this new smart TV probably doesn't have a headphone jack, right?
Yeah, I'm kind of critical.
It only has digital out. And that's because they don't want to spend the money on a digital to analog converter. They just want to split the video and the audio and send you the bits. So the bits are coming out of that little optical port on the back of the TV. You're converting them. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. You're basically doing an external DAC, external digital to audio converter, but there will be or could be one issue.
What's that?
Lip sync.
Oh, there is a delay. But what we do is we turn the audio on the TV all the way off, and you can hardly see the delay.
If it doesn't bother you, then you're good. But that's the only potential risk because there is, and it's probably not even a millisecond, but there could be some delay in that JTAC box as it converts the digital to analog. Of course, the soundbar is going to do that too, but soundbars usually have settings that let you sync things back
up. Do all soundbars then will receive the optical output?
All modern ones do for the very reason you pointed out. They wouldn't work with most TVs these days.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, that would solve my problem. Is there any soundbar in particular you can tell me definitely has this input?
The Vizios are very nice. Yamaha makes a set. We talked about them yesterday. Both of these are under $200 and give you great audio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. Oh, yeah, Chris Marquardt, our digital photographer, will be here in about half an hour. We'll talk about that. And anything else on your mind, if it has a chip in it, I love to talk, as you can tell, kind of like to talk about geeky stuff. But I hope, please, correct me if I'm not doing this, I hope to do it in plain English. Kind of like, I think this is, sometimes radio stations think this is a foreign language show. And I want them to feel comfortable. I understood what he said. So please, if I'm not saying it in English, you call me and you say, what did that mean? Sue on the line from Visalia, our next caller. Hi, Sue. Thanks for hanging on.
Hey, Leo. It's good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you.
Hey, I'm a long-time viewer, going back all the way to Screensavers and Call for Help.
Bless you, Sue. Thank you.
Now, wait a minute. I'm even still using RoboForm from your recommendation.
A great product.
I'm not sure if that's good or bad.
No, that's a great product. Still is a great product. We don't talk about it a lot. RoboForm AI was one of the first password managers. I think it was the first I ever knew about. And there's nothing wrong with it. They've kept it up to date. They continue to make it, right?
Yeah, they do. I'm not real thrilled with their mobile application, but oh well.
Well, remember, they predated mobile. RoboForm's been around so long, they came out before people were using smartphones.
Well, the weird thing is that I'll be on a website, and my phone will actually fill it in pretty well, but all of a sudden, the little RoboForm bubble will be there on the edge, and I'm going, what are you doing there? And it doesn't do anything. So anyway.
I have to be honest. Nobody's great on mobile, only because it's kind of a hack to do autofill on mobile.
Yeah, exactly.
So even LastPass, which is the one I use and recommend, and it's probably the best of the bunch, but it frequently fails on the autofill. And it doesn't do autofill at all on iOS. Nothing can.
Oh, yeah, I know. And don't I know? Like when I'm trying to autofill going into iTunes, and that was actually my original phone call was going to be on how much I hate iTunes, even though I've been using it now for 20 years.
You're not alone. You're not alone. Everybody wonders, what is Apple thinking? Why have they not updated this program? It's just getting funkier and funkier.
Oh, I could tell you tales, but I would bore your audience and they would all be asleep. Here's what I'm talking about today, though. My favorite thing is how bad habits of email. I am in organizations that have horrible habits in using email. Every email is sent out using carbon copies.
OMG.
OMG.
So they're giving out everybody's email address to everybody else.
Absolutely. And in fact, at one time it was for a family reunion, and I got this email from one of my cousins, and she had her email list, which I said, "Oh, that's good." And so I copied and pasted
into my borrow that.
Hey, that works.
See, there is a value to it. There's another reason you don't want to just use CC when you email people in a mailing list. Because if somebody replies and accidentally replies to all, everybody's going to get that in the mailing list. And that is the single most annoying thing, is these conversations that just go on and on with people I don't know and care about.
Funny you would bring that up. Item number two, replying all to everything.
Well, if you use so let me say this is tied together, because if you use BCC when you're doing a mailing list, reply to all will not, I don't think... Will it go to the BCC people?
No.
It
no,
shouldn't.
That's exactly how you cut it off.
Yeah, because you don't have access to it. So,
But
still, don't use reply to all. That's
people have their default set to reply all.
I know.
Okay, now listen to this. 2 days ago, we were having a meeting, and an email went out, and I don't even remember what the subject of the email was. But somebody said, the email said that one of the members wasn't going to be there. And I said, you might want to look at the date of that email. That was 2 months ago that she sent that email.
That's a pet peeve of mine. This happens all the time on Facebook and Twitter, too. People retweet articles that are 10 years old, and you look at it and you go, he died? I thought he was dead 10 years ago.
No, exactly.
And just people don't look at the dates. Yeah.
Okay. So I use Gmail, which I absolutely adore. And one of the people I work with regularly refuses to use the tabs. And I said to her, how many emails do you get a day? And she said, oh, hundreds. I said, you know, actually, I only see about 5 or 10 because those are the actual relevant ones. All the promotional stuff is out of my sight. If I want to look at it, great. If I don't, hey.
Yeah, and Gmail's done a good job of offering that, the priority inbox and various features
Absolutely.
Like that. I think she should turn that on. It would be a revelation to her, wouldn't it? Now, use email seriously, and I think I'm one of them, spend a lot of time on folders and filters, and whether it's in Gmail or some other program. I do a lot of filtering and foldering of stuff automatically, and that is very important because you'll otherwise be looking. For instance, here's a little tip. I search for the word unsubscribe in an email. If I see the word unsubscribe, if my email program sees it, it puts it in a folder called newsletters, because that almost always is a newsletter. So if you're trying to email me, don't put the word unsubscribe in the body of the message, because I'll never see it.
Well, the other thing is, like, the gal who had sent the old email, she evidently doesn't know how to set up I guess they call them labels. But, yeah, I spend a lot of time where I have...
They do. They call them labels. Yeah.
Yeah. And I just... And, you know, here's the thing. I know I heard you on an older podcast where you said, sometimes the fault is with the software maker. It actually would be helpful if Gmail was a little clearer on that, if they had a little label right above that point with a little down arrow that indicated, hey, you can edit the subject. Tell you all this stuff that's under that one little key, and it's kind of magical.
All of this stuff really comes down to usability, and it is up to the software developer, whether it's a web-based email program like Gmail or a program you installed on your computer. It's up to the developer to improve usability to the point that users intuitively make their life better and make the program work better, because they can just kind of get it. And if they're failing at that, they need to try a little harder. The software companies need to try a little harder to make that.
Well,
I agree with you.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah.
So here's a question. Do you know of a guide, a book, some guide to email that you've ever seen or heard about?
That's a great question. That would be like something that... I don't know. I wonder if Robin Williams ever wrote one of those. I don't mean the comedian. There's a very famous computer writer, a woman named Robin Williams. In fact, she wrote it in her bedroom, the first one, the Little PC book, which was a very good book some years ago, like 20 years ago, for people just kind of explaining how computers worked. And I really gave a lot of people that book because it was so easy and friendly. We need something like that. I'll tell you what, I'm going to open that up to the audience. We need a book that includes email etiquette. Things like change the subject line. You don't always have to just say, you know, repeat the subject, Ray, you know, whatever, over and over. Make the subject line talk about what's in the email. Makes it a lot easier for people to figure out what you want. Make the email short. Use paragraphs. Don't make it all one big blob of text. There's simple things that everybody should do. We need a book on that. Email etiquette. Somebody's saying email for dummies exists.
I'm thinking maybe I just heard a side hustle for myself.
Yeah, maybe this is your job.
I think this might be my job.
I love it. And if you do it, call me and we'll plug the heck out of it.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, I think I just found my next...
You're hired, Sue.
Okay, wonderful. I'm going to tell you a really fast story. You were at KMBR, right?
We were just talking about that many years ago.
Okay.
I have to take a break. Hang on. Just hang on a second. Because when you start with a story that says, 30 years ago, you were at KMBR. Yes, that could be a long story. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, I was – so it's the weirdest thing because I haven't mentioned KNBR in years, and Doug and Ann are visiting me, and Doug used to listen when I was on KNBR. That was in 1987.
Yeah, I think – let's see, 87. I don't know if we
– Well, 87 that. Through 92, I think. So 30 years ago.
Were Frank and Mike on
in yeah. the when you were Yeah, I used to work with the wonderful Frank and Mike. Gosh, I love those
guys. Oh, my
gosh.
They were so fabulous.
Frank Dill – Yep.
I'll tell you the story. It involves John Madden. And John Madden used to go on Frank and Mike, and he always was talking about how he loved jackhammering. And it really was kind of a comical thing. One day, Reader's Digest comes out with an article telling about how helpful jackhammering is. And I said, oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh. And this is back in the day when you only had a fax machine. And so we had a print shop at the time. I immediately faxed it up to Frank and Mike.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh. We are driving to work the next day, and they mentioned our name. And we just about ran off the road, but it was so hysterical. They said, hey, John, there's this woman who sent you an article on how jackhammering is
better. Wow.
We had more fun.
Oh, what a great – I missed that show. They were legends, and I looked up to them, and I worked with Carter B. Smith, another legend. He had worked years ago with Don Sherwood, who was the king of San Francisco radio. And I felt like I had a little connection to Don Sherwood through Carter B. I was very lucky to work there at kind of the end of the line of that kind of classic. They used to call it full service radio, where it was a little music, but a little talk, and it was just really people you really cared about. And I missed that a lot. Those were golden times. You know, Frank has passed away, but Mike Clary is a novelist now. He's just published his second novel. Yeah.
If I didn't get on the air, I was going to use code word just to see if this would get me on the air better, and it's called Key Buoy.
Key Buoy. You are a listener.
I am a listener.
I don't think Kim would know the words Key Buoy, but I know the words Key Buoy. That's hysterical.
Or Purse Guard Ultra.
Yeah. Two of the best gadgets ever from Dick DiBartolo's GizWiz show, the Key Buoy and the Purse Guard. And we didn't I laugh? I couldn't stop laughing on those. Oh, my God.
We were riding our bikes. There was this one time I almost fell off my bike. It was when you were the talking photo album.
And
do they put my pictures in? And Dick says, no, it's actually a stranger's pictures in there. And all their pictures of Europe. And I just... I am going hysterical. Oh,
I had so much fun. I kind of missed doing that show. It was a lot of fun. Dick is the greatest. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Summer songs for a hot summer day. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. I talked with Sue off the air. You'll be glad to know about her KNBR and memories. I don't know if anybody would be that interested. When you work in radio, as I have for 40 years now, you start to accumulate a batch of call signs that you've worked at. But that was one of the great stations in San Francisco that I was so proud to work there. It was my first major market station, so lots of great memories going back 30 years on that one. Sandra in Fullerton, California is next. Hi, Sandra.
Hi. Hi, Leo.
Hi, Sandra. Is it Sandra or Sandra? Which do you prefer?
Oh, Sandra's fine, or Sandy, that's fine.
Hi, Sandy.
It's so good to talk to you, and I just want you to know how much I enjoy your show.
Thank you.
And honestly, if I can say, I'd love to hear you during the week. But I love those guys that are on. But my goodness, it becomes so emotionally charged sometimes.
You know, it's so funny that you say, you know, when I worked in San Francisco radio briefly at the big news talk station there, they said, you ought to be doing a weekly political call-in show.
And I know.
I did it twice. And both times I went home with such a stomach ache.
Yeah,
I'm not doing this. It's too. No. Imagine how it's. It takes a certain confrontational personality, I guess, because I just couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. So yeah, I talking about the toy store. This is my niche. I talk about fun stuff. Nobody's going to die. Nothing serious.
But honestly, a lot of the information you give us, I would have to have my grandsons translate.
But I bet you by osmosis, Sandy, some of this is sinking in, maybe, I hope.
Yes, exactly. Especially the email information. I love that.
I should do more stuff on that, frankly. I kind of miss the boat. I'm a little bit of a geek, and so sometimes I let the geeks in the audience drive me to the higher end, and I should probably do more stuff that's just useful.
Oh, no, it's like you said, it's osmosis, and we learn something, and if we can't figure it out, then we find out, you know, if it's applicable for us.
Eventually it sinks in, and, lately I've mostly been talking about security, and I hope that's sinking in on people, how to protect themselves. Mm-hmm. It's getting worse and worse and worse. I tell you, I worry so much.
But your show obviously goes into so many things. Like, I was driving, and I heard you talking about Tesla and all of the absolutely wonderful stuff that's going on with things to protect the environment. But, you know, what I heard about the batteries is that they are not recyclable. And they gather them together and put them in these huge containers of some sort and dump them in the ocean. And so if that's the case, you know, that's not a whole lot of genius working there. So.
Yeah. No, well, okay, I'm going to tell you something. There are a lot of people who don't like Tesla and don't like electric cars and don't like renewable energy for whatever reason. You know, they don't like them. And so there's a lot of, I think, disinformation. I'm not going to use that fake news phrase, but there's a lot of disinformation about electric technologies and renewable technologies. Lithium ion batteries are not easy to recycle, but they are recyclable.
Oh, good to know.
Yeah. The problem with lithium ion batteries and anything that stores energy, and you hear about it from time to time, like the Samsung Note 7 debacle, is that because they contain a lot of energy, they have to be treated carefully. If you puncture them, they can burst into flame and even explode. So a lot of recycling plants have difficulties with lithium ion batteries. They're capable of recycling them, but it's not unusual to hear about fires. There was even a fire at the Note 7. There were two fires at the Note 7 recycling plants. The plants that took these Galaxy Note 7s back after the recall, they had fires because they were, you know, trying to recycle them. Of course, it, you know, the good news is lithium ion batteries in a car like the Tesla go at least a decade, maybe two. And by the time I think these batteries start hitting the recycling bin, they will be much more recyclable than they are now. But a lot of work is being done on that. They are recyclable. It's just hard to do. And but because we know there's going to be a mountain of these coming to us over the next decade, Companies working very hard to figure it out. I will put some links to articles about this, because I'm a big believer, you know, in getting obviously we have to recycle them. We can't be pulling these elements out of the earth and then just throwing them away, or worse, putting them in the ocean. We've got, you know, but I think that a lot of what you're going to read about this is disinformation, because, well, the oil companies want to keep selling gasoline.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, it's just getting it out there. And I just want to say that we want to make the original Tesla proud of us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So yeah. There are a lot of hazardous materials in these batteries. They have to be handled properly. They are recyclable. It is the case that probably a lot of recycling concerns don't know how to recycle properly, and we got to work on that. But I think that we are solving that. And, you know, it's clear that we can't keep burning all this gasoline, A, because we're going to run out of it at some point, and B, because it's bad for the air. It pollutes it. So, you know, and we've gotten better about that, too. Boy, Los Angeles, for instance, has changed a lot in the last 20 years. You couldn't go down. You couldn't breathe the air 20 years ago.
Exactly.
And thanks to strong emission standards, we've able to fix that. But I believe in renewable. I have solar panels on my roof, and there's still issues. But we got to move in that direction. And I tell you what, as I mentioned at the very beginning of the show, estimates are now that in the next 10 years, renewables will become cheaper than gasoline. And that's what's going to change it. That's the trigger. Because people are economically driven, of course. They're going to do what's cheap.
Right. All right, that's what I wanted to say. And just take good care and stay healthy so you can give us all...
I'm working on it, Sandy. Thank you. I appreciate it. Take care. Have a great day.
You too.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I love it. The chat room, all they can talk about right now, I don't know how they got into it, but they're talking about fountain pens. Now, you might say, well, that's exactly the opposite of the tech guy, a fountain pen. But, in fact, there are quite a few geeks and nerds who quite like fountain pens and analog wristwatches. There's a certain pleasure in a great writing instrument or a beautifully made mechanical device. So maybe it isn't quite so far off the point. I have a good friend, Mike Sugarman, used to work in radio here in San Francisco. He's now in New York City at WCBS, and just did a piece on the last company making typewriters in the world. There is a company that continues to make electric typewriters. And it turns out the big market for these typewriters is prisons, because prisoners can't use computers. So they get electric typewriters, and the ones they sell to the prisons have clear cases, so nobody can hide anything in the typewriter body. But apparently there's quite a market. Brother was the last typewriter company. They went out of business, the second to last, penultimate. They went out of business last year. But this guy, and I don't remember the name of the company. I'll look it up for you. So now I want to buy a typewriter. I don't know why. But I have some nostalgia about those things. 888-88-ASK-LEO is the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. and Canada. The website, and I do put links up there, and I'll put some links on recyclables and lithium-ion batteries, at techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. That's free. No sign-up. Chris Markwart, the photo guy, coming up next. Brother makes printers. They don't make typewriters. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, and as always on a Sunday at this time, it's time for our photo guy, Chris Markwart. I have the wrong button here. Let me get your name up. Chris Markwart is the host of the Tips from the Top Floor podcast. He's a great photographer and leads wonderful photographic workshops, which you'll find at discoverthetopfloor.com, and joins us every week to help us be better photographers, even if we don't have fancy equipment. They call it gas. And I have gas.
Gear acquisition syndrome.
Gear acquisition syndrome.
What is it now? What's going on now?
I just think that every time I buy a new camera, I will be a better photographer or a new lens, and it never does it.
Hey, come on. I have to say, as much as I've talked about, hey, you don't need that stuff, there are reasons for buying something. And very often, some photography you won't be able to do without some special gear. So...
Well, my wife has gas now.
what does she want?
Well, she, as you know, when we went on our vacation, I brought my Canon 5D Mark II, Mark IV, which is a very fancy camera, which you had told me to buy, so I bought it. I'm blaming you.
Did that trigger something?
So she didn't want to bring such a heavy camera. So she has, and I bought it for her right before we left, the Olympus OMD EM1 Mark II, which is a beautiful lightweight. It's a Micro Four Thirds camera, which makes it much lighter. It's mirrorless, simpler, but it is very high tech, and the quality's gotten very, very good. In fact, my good friend Scott Bourne, who is one of my favorite wildlife photographers and a very good professional photographer, was recently told by his doctor, if you keep carrying your this heavy gear around, your back's going to go. So he switched to the Olympus, and he's now an Olympus ambassador. He takes amazing images with this very lightweight camera. So Lisa saw that and said, well, I need better lenses. And so now we're looking at $1,000 lenses.
Oh, well, it can happen.
It does happen.
Oh. Yeah. No, it doesn't have to. But then as long as she's not trying to take the 5D from you, I think you're safe.
I know. That's the deal, right? And I can't complain because I've spent a little money on lenses myself. But it just shows you gas can spread from husband to wife.
I think your journey to the Galapagos has probably triggered a bit too, right?
It did, exactly. We had so much fun, and this is it. We want to do more. So yeah, I didn't mean to hijack your segment. We can talk about anything you want.
Oh, no worries. I want to talk about some kind of photography that is going to be coming up in about 6 weeks, the solar eclipse.
Ooh.
And the reason I want to bring this up now is because people want to maybe want to practice a bit, want to rehearse a few of the emotions, and maybe get some additional equipment for that. And so I want to just run everyone through how to do this, what to look out for when shooting a solar eclipse.
First of all, be very careful. Protect your eyes because you don't want to point a camera at the solar eclipse.
I have a list in front of me. It says never look into the sun.
Number one.
Right on the top. It's the number one thing. Even if it's a partial eclipse, even if 95% of the sun is covered, it still means the remaining 5% are dangerous.
Yeah,
one time during a solar eclipse where you can take your protective solar eclipse glasses off, and that is during a full eclipse when the corona is out.
Yeah.
But you have to wait for that to happen.
You have to be very, very careful. Yeah, it's not a...
And that might be just a few seconds or a minute, so right. It's relatively short. So
John, my studio manager, is going to Oregon to see it. He has his American Eclipse, actually quite a few American Eclipse glasses, and yep. You can get these, and they basically have welder's glass in them that's so strong.
Is there actual glass in there?
These are plastic.
To have those that have like a foil, a gel kind of thing.
Yeah, and you remember in the old days we talked about folding. Was it exposed? It was exposed negative film over and over and over. Here's John with his piece of welding glass. A friend of his last time, which was 1979. So we have this total solar eclipse. The path is going right through the United States, which is marvelous.
Yep. Starts up in, let me see,
Oregon.
Does it start in Oregon, and then goes diagonally through the U.S.
Yeah.
Now, you will need a filter on your lens, on your camera, if you want to shoot the solar eclipse with your camera. And to get one of those, there are astronomy websites that sell those. And even at bigger stores like B&H, you will be able to get them. They come as screw-on filters, and then as foil-based filters that you just stick on. Those will typically work just fine. You will also need a long focal length if you want the sun at any decent size in your photo. So for a crop camera, we're talking 800 to 1,000 millimeters, maybe more. On a full frame, that will be around 1,400 to 1,500 millimeters. So there is a chance if you have a long lens and it's not quite long enough to maybe use an extender, something to increase the focal length of that.
I should mention everybody in the U.S. will get some eclipse, but not everybody will get totality. So
yeah, totality is only in a few specific places in a few states.
And this is August 21st. It starts
August 21st.
Yeah,
yep.
10:16 in the morning Pacific time, and it continues. I'm sorry, 9:08 Pacific time, continues through 10:16 Pacific time. So actually ends at 2:04. I'm looking at the NASA site. It ends in Charleston, South Carolina at 2:48 p.m. Eastern. So it's going to be a big deal. I mean, everywhere you go, you'll be able to see some eclipse.
If you want to take the photos, you have to practice that. You have to test this. And you can't test during the regular sunshine, just normal sunshine. Use a low ISO, put that filter on, set it to an f-stop around, I don't know, somewhere around f8 to 11, and then try the different shutter speeds, 1,000, the 500th, the 100th, and so on, and then compare those on a computer and make a note of the one that works really well. And if the sun, if the eclipse starts to come in, if the sun is partially covered, you will still need that same shutter speed because the part that is not covered is still exactly the same brightness as before. So you will not have to adapt the exposure in that case. And then if in doubt, your camera has something called bracketing where you can shoot several exposures like with a one or two or three stop difference between the different exposures. So you can take a dark, a medium, and a bright photo. So if in doubt, if you're not quite sure, use that. And I would suggest use the live view on your camera, on the back of your camera, to manually focus that.
Oh, and okay.
You might think that focusing on infinity is going to help you here, but your lens is infinity when you turn it all the way to the side of infinity is typically not infinity. So oh. You want to use live view. The lenses of today's autofocus camera tend to focus over infinity, which
wow.
Is
I did
weird,
assume
but that's what happens,
that
yeah.
If you shot it at infinity, that would be fine. So you're going to pull it in a little from infinity.
You want to check on live view, and in live view, you can actually zoom in, digitally zoom in, and then it's pretty easy to find the right
but
spot.
Make sure you got that now, filter and the right lens. Oh, this is complicated. Yeah.
Now, when the corona comes, that's just the outer ring of the sun, when the moon is right in the middle, that's when you can take the filters off, or you should take the filters off for a few seconds or a minute, and because that is much darker than the actual sun, and then you can view that with your bare eyes, but make sure to put that these glasses back on and rehearse those steps. Make sure
you got to practice, but how do you practice? What do you practice on? A light bulb?
Well, you can at least practice on the sun itself. The bare sun is definitely a good thing to practice on.
As long as you have that filter, please protect your eyes.
That filter for your eyes, that filter for your camera, and then rehearse, because if you really want to get this, the next full eclipse in the United States is going to be in 2024, in 7 years.
Wow.
So there's a bit of time for more practice then.
We took a cruise to Australia, the last total eclipse some years ago, and I wish I'd heard this piece before then. I wasn't very good at taking pictures of it, but it is a marvelous experience. You'll find Chris Marquardt at discoverthetopfloor.com. We'll probably talk some more about this before August. This is exciting. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks, Chris.
Sure.
I ran out of film. He told me. Yeah. I was on a ship outside of Cairns, Australia, and the captain, for reasons he pissed everybody off, he was like trying to chase the eclipse, and he basically sailed us into cloud cover.
Oh.
that
was helpful.
And I remember Lawrence Krauss, who's a very famous physicist and writer, was on the boat. It was a Scientific American cruise. And he reamed the captain, and he gave his, the farewell speech, and he was just pissed off. So,
those total eclipses don't happen that often. So that's something, yeah.
This
either you have
what?
To travel a lot.
The most photographed, just because of the century and the location, and yeah.
Well, it's right around the corner for many people.
Should people not use their smartphone to do this?
You can. I mean, you can take a shot of the sun and it won't hurt your smartphone, you can take a shot of the eclipse, but okay. You probably won't have the right settings and things. If you want to do this, you will have to get some external lens. You have to get that filter and then you have to practice. I think it's possible with a smartphone. I'm just not sure how good it's going to be.
Yeah.
But it should be possible because you are dealing with a lot of light. So the smartphone will be at its best performance point with a lot of light.
Right,
so,
right.
I don't think it should be a big problem, but with a bigger camera, it will probably be a bit more successful.
Right. Really, really exciting. Well, I think we should talk about this a few more times before August 21st.
Yeah, I just thought I'd bring it up now just to kind of get everyone.
Yeah. Well, I think another
going,
subject would be
6 weeks isn't that long.
As John says, what to put in the foreground, because if you just have a picture of a sun eclipsed,
Oh, I've seen beautiful ones with just Eclipse, with like a time lapse where you have 10 different shots at different phases next to each other. But if you want to make this an artsy shot, then you'd have to find out where the sun is exactly, so you can place yourself and have something between you and the sun and get a silhouette of some sort.
Well, we've talked before about the photographer's ephemeris. I know you have some of that.
How high is the sun going to be up in the sky at that point? That's the main question.
Because apparently, it's fairly low. John said, right? No, it's morning. Yeah. Yeah, at least up here.
Well, if it's really low, you might be able to get a silhouette of something in front of the sun. That will need really good planning, though.
Yeah.
We're talking planning down to the second.
Yeah, that's why you need the photographer's ephemeris. John is very serious about all this, and he has my mark, very too, cool. So he's going to take that. What lens did you say? A telephoto lens? No?
Oh, long lens. I mean, if you want the sun
sounds far
at
away.
A decent size, we're talking 600 to 800 to 1,000 millimeters.
Oh, wow. A really long lens.
Yeah,
or a doubler. Yeah, what do you? You can certainly borrow my 70-200 in the doubler. Yeah, and you'll have to get a filter. Yeah, I'll bring that lens in so you can prepare.
All right. You can get those filters relatively cheaply. The foil based ones are actually fairly okay.
He says that the foil based ones are fine.
Work. Yeah,
I'll have to look for you. Yeah, I'll find it. I'll bring it in. And you can play with it.
Anthony's going. Russell's going.
Oh, nice. Well, Russell will have the gear. He's talking about gear acquisition system. Yeah, they're going up to Oregon. And several of our staffers are doing that. It's kind of cool.
Alex wants to go.
What day of the week is it?
It's a Monday.
Monday. I could go.
Maybe I will.
Well, make an excursion out of it.
Yes.
Got to remember, make sure we don't have triangulation on that Monday. Thank you, Chris. Have a great night.
All right. Take care. Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. Here comes the sun. Or... if we could have found it, a song that says, "There goes the sun." This is going to be some amazing. John, our studio manager, who's going up to Oregon along with, I think, several other people on the team, are going up there for the eclipse on August 21st. He says this will probably be, and I think he's right, the most photographed eclipse of all time. Everybody's got camera phones. There will be a lot of images of this eclipse. Will you get the perfect image? Well, now you at least know how. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. Steven on the line from Irvine. Hello, Steven.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for calling. What can I do for you?
Good. Thank you. I'm wondering, you know, I wanted to talk to you about universal remotes. I used to have a Logitech Harmony, and it worked really well for me. But then I ended up kind of connecting my living room and my bedroom and using an HDI matrix switch in order to use the same sources in both the living room and the bedroom. And once I did that, it was just too complicated for the Logitech to handle it.
Yeah.
It's not
probably the Logitech couldn't handle that switch, right? The HDMI switch.
Yeah, was definitely the biggest issue.
Yeah, those tend to be, those tend not to be kind of easily controlled by a remote. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I've been using the program RTI, but I like it and it works well, but I don't like needing to have a programmer come over and, you know, pay them to come over and change anything or fix.
Let me make a recommendation. This is $100, lot less than the old Harmony, but it's from Harmony. They call it the Harmony Hub, and it's really a clever idea. So it's just a little hub that emits, although you can't see it, the infrared to control your devices. And if you need to, you can get an IR blaster to go with it. But I found that it worked quite well, even in my cabinet with the TV above. It comes with one IR blaster. I was able to control all my devices. It works with everything. I mean, even things that you wouldn't expect, like your Lutron lights or your Nest thermostat, your Hue lights. And, of course, it works with your Amazon Echo, so you can talk to it. You can say, hey, I want to watch, let's watch Game of Thrones on HBO. And it will know how to do it. Programming is a snap. You mentioned programming, and of course, that's where the Harmonies really excel, because they've been doing this for so long that you said you had a Harmony 1. Was that what you had?
Well, it was Harmony, I believe it was like the Touch.
Yeah, they've come a long way because they have a database online of every conceivable home theater product. All you have to do really is just, you know, you go online and you tell it, you know, what you've got, and it'll know what to do. I mean, it is really remarkable. And I love voice control. I'm starting to become a big believer in voice control for all kinds of wired home things. It's just a natural way to do it. The hub works with your phone, your Android or iOS phone, and that's primarily how you'll use it. That becomes your remote. But I think for $99, this is a remarkable deal, and everybody I know who uses this loves it. Now, there are other recommendations. Our chat room says Anymote, Anymote.io. I haven't used the Anymote, but that might be another one to take a look at. I would start with the Hub just because it's so inexpensive. And you've already used a Harmony device. It would be something I would look at. The Anymote looks kind of similar to the Harmony. It's a little more expensive. It's $120. I think it's probably the same concept. Here's where Harmony, which is owned by Logitech, has an advantage. They've been in the business for so long that they have a database of every conceivable device. But you know what? I'm going to order one of these Anymotes and take a look at it because it looks like it's the same idea. It's a little doohickey that you put in your cabinet, and then you use your smartphone to talk to it, probably via Bluetooth. And then it controls all the stuff. And I'm looking. It does, you know, the same kind of broad range of home theater devices. What it doesn't seem to understand or do is the Hue lights and the Nest thermostat. I don't know how important that is to you. That's would be more like, okay, I want a command for my Amazon Echo where I say, it's movie night, and the curtains close and the lights go down and the TV comes on and all of that. I don't know if the Anymote will do that, but it's another one to look at. Marsworm says he likes that one. So, you know, we've come a long way. We've come a long way, I think, in these universal remotes. I've tried them all and never had great success. My biggest problem, and I think the Hub kind of solved this, but my biggest problem was most devices, or many devices now, don't have on-off switches exactly. They have toggles. So if it's on, it turns it off. If it's off, it turns it on. And that means that the remote needs to know what state the device is in to know what to do. A lot of these remotes say, well, you got to make sure everything's turned off before you can use it. Well, that's not always useful. I mean, I want to be able to, I just want it to work no matter what state my system is in. I think the Harmony Hub does a better job of that. That's my memory of it. I disconnected it after a while. I don't want to make it too easy for my wife. I like having 18 remotes on the side of the sofa there. Frank, Comanche, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Frank.
How you doing, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. Me and Patricia listen to your show a lot. We enjoy it.
Nice.
And I don't know if I'm asking something that can be done or not, but we had two 1080i TVs that we were splitting the signal from a DirecTV Genie. One was in the front room, one was in the kitchen.
Okay.
And we recently got a 4K smart TV.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, we really like it. And it just does a lot of things that we really didn't anticipate because we're on a limited, being out here in a rural area of Texas.
Yeah, you don't have a lot of TV signals.
We can't get a whole lot of data on our internet.
Oh, even worse.
We hooked up the TV to our Wi-Fi, and knowing that it would download about 25 programs the first night, which we didn't know, and it wiped us out on data.
Oh, no. Oh.
Yeah. So,
how frustrating is that? Well, and then if you wanted to watch, let's say, a 4K movie on Netflix, you'd need a lot of data. I mean, Netflix says you need 25 megabits down, and it's going to go through a gigabyte an hour or maybe more.
Yeah, we only get 50 a month.
Yeah.
Not even now. I'm sorry. We get 25 a month.
Oh, yeah. You'd go right through your data limit. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, but that was a learning thing, and we since then took it off of the
take it off the internet and get a UHD Blu-ray player, because there's nothing that looks better, by the way, even the stuff you watch on over broadcast, than a Blu-ray UHD in just stunning. My recommendation is the BBC Planet Earth 2, which was shot in 4K. And is in a high dynamic range if your set supports that. And man, does that look good!
Okay, oh, that's a Blu-ray.
It's UHD is the new Blu-ray spec for 4K. Blu-ray is not 4K; it's 1080p. But Blu-ray UHD. Do you like playing games? Are you a gamer? Because the Xbox,
not that much.
Okay, because the Xbox One S, that's the one I use, has a UHD player in it. So
Wow. Yeah,
I know. I thought that was a good deal. So Xbox has done that from day one. They had an HD DVD player in the Xbox 360.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, that I think is a nice way to watch 4K without using up your bandwidth.
Uh-huh. But what we're experiencing now is Patricia likes to cook, and so she's in the kitchen with her little 1080i TV that I bought for her, and I'm in there with the 4K TV now. Watching something, and we were both watching the same thing because we were just mirroring it off of one TV genie. But we were using a View HD splitter before when we had two 1080i TVs.
Yeah.
And it worked beautiful. I had a 50-foot HDMI cord wrapped going up the wall into the attic, coming down into the kitchen. It was invisible. It worked great. But now, since we got the Samsung 4K, I tried to use the same splitter and the 1080i TV in the kitchen. All it has is purples and blues.
Yeah. It sounds like the signal it's getting for the 4K is somehow messing up the 1080i. I don't know. Maybe somebody in the chat room has used this DirecTV Genie. This sounds like a limitation. I'll tell you what, we have to take a break anyway, Frank. I'll be over for dinner in just a few minutes, and you can. I wish I could. Let me see if I can find some answers for you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So, Scooter X, what do you think? Is the issue that he's trying to use? And stay on the line, Frank, because we can keep talking.
Okay.
We're at the top of the hour. Scooter X has a DirecTV Genie DVR and clients. Is there an issue, do you think? Because it's so. Tell me, Frank, the content you're watching on your 4K, is it 4K content?
No. It's still, I think, a 1080p.
Shouldn't make any difference. And you're not splitting it twice. You're just doing the one split, right?
Yeah, we're just mirroring it to the kitchen.
So do you have a separate genie for the kitchen and a separate genie for your TV?
You're splitting it. With the HDMI cable that has a performance for 3D and 4K in it. But the TV itself won't accept the 1080p, because it's an older TV.
One possible is turn off both TVs and start with Patricia's. Turn on Patricia's first and let her get a signal first.
Oh.
And then turn on the other TV and see if that works.
Okay.
If that doesn't work, then you're going to probably have to get another Genie box and have one for both TVs.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, that's what we were trying to eliminate. But,
yeah. How much is another Genie? Are they expensive?
Yeah.
It might also be copy protection. I don't know. But just try that at least. Start so both TVs off, turn on hers, then start the stream. See if it works. Sounds like you're doing it right now. And then turn on your nice new TV second.
Okay. All right. That's a good idea. I didn't think of that, and we didn't do that. That's a good idea.
I mean, the Genie isn't designed to do what you're doing, which is split the signal, and that's part of the problem. The Genie's designed to have one Genie per TV.
Yeah.
So ultimately, that's going to be the fix. But try this first, anyway.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Frank. Take care.
Take our call.
What's Patricia cooking?
Good. Great.
What is she cooking? Tell me what she's cooking.
What's for dinner? Oh, tonight we're actually taking my 93-year-old mother out to dinner.
Oh, you're sweet. Aren't you sweet? What show are you going to go see?
Tonight. She doesn't have to cook.
Oh, how fun. What show are you going to go see?
And make herbs.
Yeah.
I grow my own herbs and I can my own tomatoes.
See, I had a feeling. I thought maybe that was the case. I don't know why. I got that vibe that you're a pretty good cook.
It.
Yeah.
Yes, I enjoy it. I enjoy it. Thank you so much. I got him on this radio station. I listen to you every Sunday. And I said, you got to call in. So I love listening to you. I learn a lot.
Thank you so much. So you're tomorrow, welcome. What are you cooking?
probably chicken, cheese, enchiladas.
Ooh. Yes. Love those.
Or green sauce with rice and homemade beans.
Do you make your own tomatillo sauce?
Yes. And I make, of course, I never buy canned beans.
I'm going to start crying. You make your own beans?
Oh, absolutely.
So you have to soak them overnight? How do you do that?
You don't have to. You don't have to soak them overnight. You just put them on a pan, put some water in there. And I used to do that, but no, you don't have to. And by the end of the day, we've got nice fresh beans with fresh peppers and onions and fresh tomatoes. I make my own seasoning and tomato paste and pesto.
You grow your own herbs for that?
Yes. And I take my tomatoes and I dehydrate them, and then I turn them into powder, and then I add my virgin cold pressed oil. It's very good.
I never heard of doing that. I've had sun-dried tomatoes, but never had powdered tomatoes.
Yeah. Yep. You just put them in a blender, and they turn to powder. So and then you
it breaks them up. Sure, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you can put them in the freezer after you dehydrate them, and you can do it later. But it's all enjoyable, and then I use that for gifts for the holidays and birthdays.
Well, Frank is a lucky guy.
He is, and I'm a lucky girl.
I'm glad you appreciate each other. That's lovely. Have a great day. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, augmented reality and virtual reality. All that shit. It's hard to say. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Rick on the line from San Diego. Hi, Rick.
Hey, Leo, longtime listener. Like, I'm thinking 2 decades, right?
Let's see. I started in L.A. As the tech guy in 2004, but I have been doing this since the early 90s, answering computer questions on the radio. I just wasn't the tech guy till 2004. That's when I got the title.
My first round was talking to the screener. I think your name is Kim, right?
Kim Schaffer, the wonderful Kim Schaffer, yes.
She already hooked me up. She goes, you didn't get hacked. You got cloned on your Facebook.
Oh, wow. What is that? Okay, so tell me what happened, first of all.
Well, the classic started getting messages from my friends. Hey, I'm getting these friend requests. Did you start a new Facebook? And
that's happened to me, too.
So what's the dangers and...
It's pretty easy to do if you think about it. If somebody can see your Facebook page, if it's public... and by the way, that's why I got burned, because anybody who wants to can follow me on Facebook. There's a setting in Facebook where you can say only people I permit can see my page. And then or you can say anybody can follow me. You have followers. And as a public figure, you know, I allow followers and I only friend the people I know in real life. That's kind of my policy. But any of those followers can say, let's take Leo's profile picture. Let's take Leo's header picture. Let's take a bunch of pictures. Let's take a bunch of posts and create a new page, Leo Laporte Jr., and then put it all there so it looks real. My friends wouldn't know the difference. And then what you do is you go out and you friend all those people. Now, why would somebody do that? Well, they might do it to mess with you, but more likely they're spammers, and they're just collecting more names on Facebook so they can send out spam or malware. One of the ways viruses and ransomware spread is through links in messaging, including Facebook. So somebody might, a classic Facebook ruse is to message a friend. Now remember, if they've cloned your Facebook, it'll look like it came from you, saying, wow, that was quite a night. I have video of it if you want to see it. Now, if I got that message, I would say, well, I didn't do anything. I stay home every night. But I still might go, well, but I wonder what he's got. So I would click that link. That's where you went wrong. Because if you click that link, it then says, oh, hey, I'd love to show you the video, but your flash is out of date. Download the new flash updater. And you go, oh, yeah, that happens all the time. You click that link, and you download what looks like Adobe's Flash, except it's not. That's the malware.
I get what you're saying. You know what concerns me, though, Leo, is that if I go to settings and security and login, it shows that there's two logins. People logged in. One of them logged in today. You know, I log in once to Facebook every 6 months. But it shows that Borrego Springs.
Yeah, if people are logging into your Facebook account from other places, immediately change your password.
Yeah, I tried to do that. The damn system hung. Like, even on my other phone, I tried it.
Keep trying, and if not, then you immediately contact. You should do this anyway. Change your password first, and then contact Facebook, the Facebook security team. Tell them what's going on, because somebody's apparently hacked you. So there's something you can do to prevent that, by the way, and I strongly encourage you to do it. It's turn on what they call two-factor authentication. Facebook supports this. Twitter does. Gmail does. Pretty much everybody. Your bank. In Facebook's case, the way it works is when you turn it on, they will then, if you try to log in on a new computer, as in if you're a bad guy trying to fake, you know, get into your account, if you log in a new computer, say, fine, what's the password? The bad guy seems to know your password, so he types it in. Then it says, ah, nice, welcome. Now, what's the six-digit code from your Facebook code generator? So they have on the app, you might have seen it if you look through the app, at the very bottom of the settings, there's a code generator, generates a six-digit code. Sometimes, I'm not sure when or why, but sometimes Facebook will just send you a code. Oh, use this code and text it to you. Use this code to log into this website. But in any event, if you have that turned on, even if somebody guesses your password or sees it over your shoulder or steals it somehow, you still are protected. Now, there is one more thing Facebook does you should be aware of. You probably noticed when you log into Facebook, the next time you use it, you don't have to log in, right? That's because Facebook stores what's called a cookie, a little bit of information on your hard drive that identifies you. That cookie will let you just click and log into Facebook. It basically says, he's already authenticated on this machine, so just let him in. Well, the problem is that cookie can be used by others to get in your Facebook account, even if they don't have your password. So you should never, for instance, when you're, let's say, logging in at the library to Facebook or any public computer, you really want to be careful there. And usually there's a checkbox that says, is this a public computer? If you check that box, it won't save that cookie. If it does, the next person who sits down at the library can be you. Even if you close the browser window, if he goes to Facebook.com, it'll say, oh, hey, Rick, how you doing? Welcome back. And that may be what's happened. So you've probably seen this checkbox when you log in. Is this a public computer? That kind of thing. That's why that's there. If you're logging in at home, a computer that you and you alone have access to, then it's fine. That's a convenience. You don't have to re-enter your password. But if you're on a public computer, you want to have to re-enter your password. So check that box that says, this is a public computer. Don't save that cookie. Don't save that browser. There are also, Dr. Mom's telling me, and this is, I didn't know this, Facebook has a one-time pass option that's probably even better to use in public computers. If you text OTP to Facebook, they'll send you back a password that can be used once and once only. That's the one you should use at the library or the coffee shop or any public computer, because that can't be reused. So that's nice. So Google Facebook and one-time password. Facebook doesn't say, is this a public computer? They have a checkbox that says, remember browser. That's another way. It's kind of the opposite, right? The default is don't remember the browser, but for convenience, you might check that box, remember the browser, so you don't have to re-enter the password. Don't do that in the public. I did not know about one-time passwords. We will put a link to that in the show notes. There's a good article about that Dr. Mom's passing along in the chat room. We'll put a link to that in the show notes at techguylabs.com. That's our website, techguylabs.com. It's a website called Iconoclast, and it says how to use a one-time password to Facebook. See, this is a perfect example. Facebook does a good job, I think, of security, but it's kind of, I mean, had you ever heard about that? I never heard. I use Facebook all the time. Never heard about that. So they have stuff, but they maybe don't even tell people about. Or maybe they, I don't know. That's part of the problem with Facebook in general. There's too much. Go into the settings. There's 1,200 pages of settings or something. It's too complicated. So anyway, complain to Facebook about that second account. That's not yours. They will take that down. If somebody's showing up as logging into your account and it's not you, change your password, contact Facebook, and absolutely everybody listening should turn on two-factor authentication to protect their Facebook. In fact, turn it on for everything. I know it's a pain. There is a very direct trade-off between convenience and security. Let's give up, and I strongly suggest it, give up a little bit of convenience and gain a lot of security. It's really worth it. They call it second factor authentication, and it really makes a difference. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. Lots more calls to come. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And don't forget that website, because that's got all this stuff there. TechGuyLabs.com. Ooh. Mr. Cotta. I got the Ring video doorbell here. I love this. It's so cool. This is the Ring video doorbell. If somebody rings my doorbell, my phone says somebody's at your front door, and I can see a picture of them, and I can answer it no matter where I am in the world. If somebody walks by my front door, I get a little notification if I want. I could turn that off. And by the way, you could set the area it looks at and how far out it looks. And then you get a notification that says, hey, somebody just walked by. And you can look and you can say, hey, get away from my front door. I love this doorbell. I put it on and we've had this now for, gosh, a long time, more than a year. And it's just the greatest thing. When the postman or the UPS person comes to the door, I can say, hey, just leave the package there. I can keep an eye on it. I can, as you saw, Echo, show my front door. I can see my front door on my, this is my Echo Show. Let's see if I can reach it far enough to see it. Echo, show my front door. Let's see if I get it.
Okay, getting the front door camera.
This is the coolest thing ever. And that's just a live view of the front door if I just want to, you know, see what's going on out there. There it is. Can't quite see it, but you could tell. There it is. There's the front door. They've also got, by the way, and this would also work with the Echo, they have new cameras, the floodlight cam. It's a motion-activated camera and floodlight. You put that in other places of your house. I'd put it all the way around that. You know, I have floodlight cams in every corner. And then it connects to your phone with HD video, two-way audio. Now, you might say, well, what do I need two-way audio out in the back? Well, if you see someone in your yard, you can say, hey, what can I help you? I'll tell you what, they run. It's interesting to watch how fast they run when that happens. It's scary. At night, if you walk by, the lights come on. You'll immediately know what it is, whether you're at home or away. The ultimate home security, high visibility, floodlights, a powerful HD camera. Wall Street Journal said, the Ring floodlight cam and Ring video doorbell, best of CES 2017. I want you to have it. In fact, we put together these Ring of security. Wait a minute, there's somebody at my front door. Hold on. I'll handle that later. There's a car there. Look at this. Somebody just pulled up. Can you see that? I can't quite get that there. We've got a special deal if you go to ring.com/techguy. The Ring of Security Kits, which are awesome. You get a Ring video doorbell, and you get a 1, 2, or 3 floodlight cams. Basic kit, everyday kit, deluxe kit. You figure out what you need. It is great. And I installed one for my mom, and you should do that for your elderly parents. I mean, it's just the greatest thing. Ring.com/techguy. I sent mom an Echo Show, too, so she can now see if there's somebody at her front door. She doesn't have to get up, which is, you know what, kind of a blessing for her. Ring.com/techguy. Oh, somebody just going out my front. I wish you could see this. Ring.com/techguy. I need a little more cord. Isn't that funny? That's Sarah. I know her, so it's okay. Echo, stop. It is a hot town. Wow. burning up here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're talking high tech, something cool, something relaxing. Rick in San Diego. Oh, I just talked to Rick, so let's move on to Kathy in Pasadena. Thank you for hanging on, Kathy. Hi, Kathy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Wait a minute. Got to push the button. There she is. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure. Thank you for calling.
I have to tell you, I'm 56, so I didn't have computer training, and I just kind of taught myself, and you have been such a great help to me.
I'm a little older than you, and I didn't have any computer training either. It's fun, though, isn't it? Do you like it?
Well, at times, yes.
Yeah, it's a love-hate thing. I understand. Yeah.
It is. Here's my question. I have a MacBook Air laptop, which I adore.
Yeah.
I've had it for about 2 years.
Good.
I'm on it quite a bit. I have to document all my medical for work.
Okay.
And over the last 2 or 3 months, I have severe pain in my shoulders and neck and back. And I know I'm not ergonomically set up, so
you're probably a little hunched over it, aren't you?
Well, I raised it up.
Oh, good.
For now, I got a detached keyboard. I got a mouse, and it didn't seem to help much. So I went online to try and learn what was best. I went to all the big stores. Nobody there knows anything.
Need an ergonomist, somebody who's an expert in ergonomics.
Exactly, and. So I don't really know where to go from here. I mean, I'm willing to spend the money on one of those work tables if necessary because this is a huge part of my work. I have to do it.
Well, first thing I would say is, and we say this all the time, but no one does it. I don't even do it. Your computer screen, ergonomically speaking, should be at eye level. In fact, you can test this. Just reach your arm out, and it should be right at the tips of your finger as you reach out the arm. Now, on a laptop, that's going to be probably too far, so you can make it closer. But it really needs to be at eye level. You're hunching over it because it's a laptop. Now,
Right. You
could raise it up. There are laptop stands. You can go on eBay and get one. I have a bunch of laptop stands. And that raises them up. It has another advantage. You can put the keyboard under there. It keeps the thing cool because it's got holes in it. So you can have one that'll raise it up. But yes, you could also get a desk that raises up. That's not a bad idea. Yeah, in fact, we offer them to our staff, and many of them use them.
Okay. Do you have any recommendation on those?
Yeah, we have a sponsor. And that's actually who provided them for us. I can't remember its name. Hey, what's the...
Veridesk.
Veridesk. Thank you. I couldn't remember the name. Veridesk.com.
I'm sorry. One more time.
Vera, as in verify. Veridesk. The Veridesk.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry. Vari. Jeez, you'd think for a sponsor, I'd know how to spell their name. And anyway, what I like about these is these go on top of your existing desk.
Okay.
So they – and you can – and so what it is you'll still have your normal desk, and the Vera desk would be at desk level when it's fully compacted, but you can raise it up. And my wife uses one. A lot of our staff use one. We really like them because they don't require modification of the desk. You can even use these at work. And they come in a box assembled. You don't have to do all this big assembly.
Oh. That's awesome.
I know. And they're not very – they're, a couple $100. They're not cheap, okay. but they're well-made, and they're balanced. They're spring balanced, so it doesn't take a lot of effort to raise and lower them.
Oh,
so
gosh.
Instead of having a stand – what they call standing desks, you can have a regular height desk that you then raise up as needed.
Okay.
So I highly recommend these, and I think that will help you when you're working with a laptop. Absolutely. Yeah.
Terrific. I will get on it.
Yeah. Varidesk.com. And there are other companies that make these, but I'm very familiar with these because everybody at the office uses them. I used for a long time an UpDesk, UpDesk. The UpDesk is has a motor in it, and you press a button, and it goes up or down, depending on how high you want it. That's more expensive, that's also a nice. That's basically a whole desk. It's just the whole desk goes up and down. So for your home, an up desk isn't a bad idea either. I really like my up desk.
Up desk, okay,
yeah.
Great.
Yeah,
great.
We don't talk a lot about ergonomics, and we probably should because there's all sorts of things, damage you can do to yourself using a computer. You wouldn't think so.
Oh, no kidding. But, I mean, I couldn't believe how it really affects my function,
yeah.
You know, and it took me a while to figure out what was going on. But anyway, that's going to be
it does sound big, like it's an issue of hunching over it. And that.
Yeah. Well, and then, you know, the where your arms, I guess, what I've gathered, your elbows should be at your side, actually.
Yeah. Yes, so I can give you the basic talk on it because I've done enough segments on ergonomics over the years to kind of internalize this. Exactly right. You don't want your hands above or below your elbows. You kind of want you want your elbows to rest basically at your sides with the arms almost straight out. It's some people find it handy to have a wrist rest, and you can get those for a keyboard so that you're because what you don't also want to do is tilt your wrists. As you type, either up or down, you want it to be kind of level. So the idea is everything is at right angles and level.
Right.
And so you might find it useful. They even make mouse pads with little wrist lifts, to little cushions for your wrist to keep your wrist up. So that's for people who are suffering from carpal tunnel. That's not uncommon because they torque their wrist. Their wrist is bent slightly as they're typing or mousing. And over a long period of time, that really can cause an inflammation of the nerves inside the wrist, and it becomes very painful.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases, yeah, you need surgery. My wife ended up getting a surgery for that.
Although,
yeah. The other thing, of course, you want a chair or a device that will help you sit upright. I've used and think they're kind of silly, but they have knee chairs where you're kind of in a crouched position sitting on your knees. I don't find those very comfortable. Currently, though, I sit on an exercise ball, a yoga ball, and that kind of is a nice kind of chair because you can't sit, you can't slump, and you can't. You have to kind of stay mobile and flexible, and you're supporting yourself. It's an active kind of sitting. I'm not sure if ergonomics, it makes sense ergonomically, but I find it's very good. And then you do want your keyboard, I mean your screen about at eye, your eyes should be right at hitting in the middle of the screen. That's probably the biggest problem. You're looking down at the screen.
Okay.
Some people recommend, and I've used them, and I think this makes sense, computer reading glasses. They're slightly magnified, and they often have blue blockers in them to block out the computer light tends to be on the blue side. And some people, if your eyes get tired because you're spending a lot of time on the screen, those will help a lot.
Okay.
There's a company that makes these. You can also, you know, your optometrist can arrange for them. But there's a company called Felix Gray that makes glasses for computers. Yeah, and they're, you know, the idea is they're filtered. They also have anti-glare coating, so you any glare on the screen. So if you if your eyes are feeling tired, you know, this would only be if you spend 4 or 5 hours a day on the screen. But if you do, that can make a big difference too.
Well, at times I do.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, you definitely don't want that hunching. That's not good.
Exactly.
Well, I'm glad you called. Thank you.
I have a quick little comment.
Hold on just a second because we got to take a break, but I'll take your comment off the air. Hold on. All right, I'm off now, but do we still have a large audience watching and listening? So.
Okay, I was just going to tell you, I work with individuals with disabilities, and so part of what I have to do is I have to assess their communication skills and their vocabulary, and we use tests where we just show pictures and can you name these items?
Mm-hmm.
And anybody that I test, one of the pictures is a typewriter. And anybody under 30 doesn't know.
No one knows what it is. That's hysterical. You should show them a dial phone. Show them a prince's phone.
They don't know what it is.
I think you need a newer test.
I know.
But it changes so fast, right?
It does.
It's amazing. It does. There is a very good website, ergonomics.org. That's what this is ergonomics.
Uh-huh.
And it might be worth taking a look at that. There's lots of articles there about, you know, how to take care of yourself if you use a computer a lot.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Hey, thank you, Leo, so much.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling. You too. Take care of yourself. One would think I look at a computer all day. I don't, actually, right? I'm not looking at a computer now. I'm looking all over. And so I actually don't spend that much time in front of a computer. I spend a lot of time in front of a camera. Oh, I love that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. John on the line from San Diego. Hi, John.
Hey, Leo. Really enjoying your show today.
Thank you.
Before I get to my question, I just want to tell you, with all the reminiscing, I'm suffering from WordStar and Harvard Graphics flashbacks.
Aha! I still, my fingers, well, from time to time while I'm typing, still do, what is it, Control-KS? I'm trying to remember the save command. It's still in there. It's in your fingers somewhere.
That's right.
The dot commands.
Like the dinosaurs, some things should be chosen for extinction.
Yeah.
So those were two of those.
Yeah, WordStar and Harvard Graphics. Wow.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you today about the Samsung Gear S3. So yesterday was my birthday, and my three boys hinted around that they would like to get me the Gear S3. Two specific questions, because these smartwatches are changing so fast. One is, I understand you could get one tied to your carrier. My carrier is Verizon. And then the second question is, it's been out a little while now. I'm wondering if you know anything about what the follow-on would be. Would it be the Gear S4 and what it might have that would make me want to wait?
Funny you should ask this. I'm wearing a Gear S3 Frontier right now. It is, of all the smartwatches, it's my favorite. I didn't like the earlier Gear watches because you had to have a Samsung phone. That has changed. This works with my iPhone as well as any Android phone I use. It is not as capable as, say, an Apple Watch or an Android Wear watch because there aren't that many apps for it. But the apps they have are all the apps I need, so I don't mind that so much. It has a very useful user interface, which nobody's copied. The bezel, the ring around the watch face, turns, and that is how you select screens. And I find
that so cool.
It is the easiest way to set screens. The battery life on this watch is better than the battery life on any other smartwatch, except the Pebble. The battery is several days, which is nice, at least two, so much so that I turned on the always-on mode. A lot of smartwatches go dark unless you tilt your wrist up to look at them. That's typical of all the Android Wear and Apple watches. And I just find that annoying. So I leave it in the always-on mode, and it gets through the day just fine. That means it looks like a wristwatch. It gets a little darker when I'm not looking at it specifically, but it's always on. Oops, as it just went off. That's because I'm not wearing
it. Have you been able to use the Samsung Pay?
I have. Works great. Samsung Pay has one feature that is... No, not at all. One feature I like about Samsung Pay is it works not only with touch and pay, you know, touch to pay, like Apple Pay or Android Pay, but Samsung also works with card readers, with a swipe to pay, which is weird.
Right.
And sometimes that freaks out the clerk, but everybody uses touch to pay now, so clerks are not as surprised as they were. But you touch the watch to even a swipe card reader, and I guess it's putting out magnetic... I don't know how it works, but it looks like a stripe. And the card reader goes, yeah, fine, okay. And it works. So, yeah, I use Samsung Pay. I think that's a nice feature.
You could solve your sciatica problem by leaving your wallet at home.
I no longer have to put a wallet in my pocket. That's absolutely right.
Yeah, if you remember that Seinfeld episode with George's huge wallet,
yes.
That'll solve your sciatica problem.
My wallet is starting to look like a Costanza. Exactly right. I love this S3. Now, you ask a good question. You ask a question. Where's the S4? I don't know. This is not a vibrant, vital category, I'm afraid. So I don't know what Samsung's commitment is to it, but I wouldn't hesitate to get an S3 today. It's a great watch. What phone are you going to use it with?
So I'm currently using the Galaxy Note 5, and I'm going to pre-order the Galaxy Note 8. That would have been a question I would have floated to Chris, the photo guy, about the Galaxy Note 8 dual camera.
Yeah, we don't know anything yet about the Note 8. Whatever you're reading, and I've read it too, is rumor, not fact.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that absolutely, judging by the S8 and the Note 7, Samsung has superb cameras, every bit as good as anybody else, including Apple. So I think you're going to love that S8. I think all phones starting in next year and maybe towards the end of this year will have dual cameras. There's two ways to use it. The iPhone 7 uses it the obvious way, which is one's kind of wide angle, one's telephoto. But other manufacturers like LG and I suspect Samsung will do this, are using that second camera for additional information that makes it possible to make better images. And I think that's what Samsung will do. And I think that that is going to be a significant technology. Computational photography is the future of photography.
Now, is there an app to control a Samsung smart TV? I've got a Series 8000 4K. I'm wondering if I could be – this is the height of laziness, right? Sitting on my couch, tapping my watch to control the TV.
There is not. And that's where the watch falls down, is there are no apps for the watch except what's on the watch. In other words, you can have any phone apps you want, unlike the iPhone and Android phone, where apps that are on the phone can be copied to the watch. That's not the case with the Gear S3. But, you know, it's a good fitness watch. You got weather. It does notifications quite well. You spin the bezel to the left to see the notifications. If you can, as you pointed out, it can be used as a phone. I've had phone calls, conversations on it. It can ring when the phone rings. So I think this is the watch I prefer, the smartwatch I prefer. I'm very happy with it. I think it's very good. As long as you understand its limitations, it's going to come with the faces it comes with. You can add more faces. That is one thing you can do. But it has a pretty good selection of faces to begin with. I think it's a very attractive watch. It's a round face, which I think all watches should be round, frankly. I don't like Apple's
pillow shape. Well, there are two versions. There's one that you could just get, I guess, at Best Buy, but I guess you could buy one at the Verizon store and tie it to your Verizon cellular.
Yeah, you don't have to, though.
I'm a little foggy on that.
Yeah, you don't have to. So that would give it its own phone number. And frankly, what I'd prefer to do is just have it paired with the phone so it rings with the phone. And it does that via Bluetooth. That's how Apple Watches work. That's how most Android Wear watches work. The new Android Wear supports this as well. You get a SIM card in the watch. So that means you can leave your phone behind and make phone calls on the watch. I don't find that particularly useful, but if that's something you think you'd want to do, then you will want to pay attention to that and probably will have to go to the phone store to get it because you're buying a phone. By the way, you pay for it, too, your phone subscription on that watch.
Oh, right, right.
I didn't really want a separate phone number.
Right, and I can't imagine leaving my phone behind.
Yeah, you're going to carry your phone. So if you have your phone, when the phone rings, the watch rings, you can answer it on the watch. If you want, that's fine.
Right, right. Yeah, So you think it's still, you know, a fairly new piece of technology and you wouldn't hesitate getting it today, huh?
Yeah, it's not that new, but it is. I don't anticipate a brand new one coming. Who knows? You know, Samsung's not telling me what they're up to. They haven't given any indication, as far as I can tell, of an updated watch. But this one works just fine. It does everything any other smartwatch does, with the one exception you can't install. So, for instance, let's say you have Uber on your iPhone. Well, you can then have Uber on your Apple Watch or Uber on your Android Wear watch, but you can't put Uber on the Samsung Gear S3 because it doesn't take apps. So you'll never get Uber on here if that's important to you. And other apps like that. But it does, but you know what? I consider a smartwatch, it should be a watch first, give you notifications. So, you know, when somebody's in my backyard, I get a little notification. Hey, we just saw somebody in your backyard. That's nice. On the Apple Watch with the Nest cameras, it'll show the picture of the guy in the backyard. It can't do that on the S3. But I can look at my phone for that. And it's good for fitness. It will track. It actually does a better job of fitness. One of the features the S3 has is if you start going on a walk, it'll say, oh, I see you're going on a walk, and it'll start recording it. Every other smartwatch, you have to tell it, I'm going on a walk, start recording it. I like that. I think that's a nice feature. And when you pause, the watch pauses. So I think you're going to like it. Tell your kids, go ahead, get me the watch.
Awesome. Thank you a lot, Leo.
You have some nice
really
boys.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure. Yeah, of all, you know, I've tried them all, and this is the one I like, and I continue to wear. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. Give me a ring. Let's talk high tech. Oh, look who's on the phone. Dr. Mom. Hi, Dr. Mom. Lillian, great to talk
Leo,
to you.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
Lillian from Long Island. I am doing well. You just got a Tesla, didn't you?
Oh, yeah.
You like it?
Oh, it's the best car I have ever driven.
Yeah, that's kind of my feeling, too. There you give up a few things. It's a little weird. It's like, I think of it as like a go-kart with a big computer. But... It's fun.
A little bit more than that.
Yeah. It's got doors that go like this.
Yeah. I just took it on a long road trip, and I will tell you, forgetting the motor, the seats are the most comfortable I've ever been in.
Oh, good.
Sitting there and driving for two or 3 hours.
Oh, good. Yeah, I've been very happy with, but we both have Model X's. Hers is in a very nice color, though. Fire engine red.
Midlife crisis red.
Yeah. Give me a ticket, officer. I'm driving too fast, red. So what can I do for you, Lil?
Okay, this call is actually for my husband who won't sit on the phone to get through.
Dr. Dad. Okay.
Right. He's a philatelist, a stamp collector.
Oh, my God. Is that legal? Philately.
In some states, yes.
Yes.
Well, when they sit there and they go to shows, he has to put up pictures of the stamps along with descriptions of where they were used, et cetera.
Right.
And his old laser printer is dying. He wants to get a new one. And he needs to be able to run heavy card stock through it.
Ah.
And it's 11 by 14, up to pages size 11 by 14. I can't think of a printer that's going to do that. Can you?
No. In fact, I'm surprised he's using laser. Why doesn't he get a nice inkjet printer?
Because with the card stock, he's found that we've got a couple of inkjets. It soaks in too much.
Ah. Yeah, what I would probably, if I were him, I would do is instead get a photo inkjet printer and a photo paper. Does it have to be stiff?
That's the catch. First thing he asked me was he wanted a flat paper path, and I said, forget it. I can't think of anyone printer that does flat paper paths like that. There are
plenty of inkjets that do cardstock. That's not difficult. I mean, you have a flat path. You feed it through the back because you don't want the cardstock to bend. So you feed it through the back and it comes straight out in the front. In fact, I know the Epson Workforce that we talk about, our sponsor, absolutely supports cardstock up to 68 pounds.
Will it do 11 by 14?
11 by 17, yes.
Okay, that's fine then.
And that has pretty good colors. I mean, it's not, I would think he'd want photorealistic reproduction, though, right?
No, actually, the original stamp goes on the page, but he's got to be able to have writing around it.
Oh, I see.
The maps and stuff.
Oh, I see. So it's for mounting the stamp.
Correct.
I get it now. Okay. So the Workforce, let's see, the Workforce 7620 does that. It's not too expensive. I think it's under $300. I see a Canon Pixma will do that as well. The Pixmas are nice because they do photo reproduction, photo quality as well. Epson's Workforce is a color inkjet, but is not designed to do photo reproduction. It's designed for kind of what we call business graphics.
Photo reproduction he doesn't need, and we have an artisan Epson.
No, I understand
that.
We
need to do something
for it. If you like the, the Epson Artisan's a great printer. So, yeah, I would say absolutely the Workforce from Epson's do large format. The color's good, and it's certainly great for, text and graphics, and it will handle cardstock.
Okay, yeah, that's what he needs. Okay, well, thanks.
Anytime, Dr. Mom, you're such a help to us. I know anybody who listens to the show on a regular basis or any of our shows hears me quoting Dr. Mom all the time. She's our expert in so many things, so I appreciate it.
I'm going to make one comment about the Harmony Hub.
Oh, yeah, you have a Harmony Hub?
Right.
Okay.
It's great. It does not play happily with the Eero mesh networks.
Yeah, I've heard...
And Harmony knows that.
Yeah, this is something that... So these mesh networks, and Eero is another sponsor I should mention, these mesh networks are really a boon for people who have bad Wi-Fi. But, and I think this is a short-term problem, there are a lot of devices that don't seem to like the mesh networks. And I'm not sure why. One of the things mesh networks often do is move devices to different, move around, hop around in the spectrum, and it may be that. I don't know what it is.
That's exactly what it is, because it'll be hooked up to the router, the access point in the family room where it is.
Yeah.
And then I'll see 6 hours later, it's in the living room, which is 30 feet away. And then it's jumped to another one on the second floor.
Yeah, the mesh is designed to do that. They think they're optimizing.
it's not optimizing.
But that may not help some devices. I think it's going to be ultimately up to companies like Logitech to understand many of their customers will be using these kinds of, quote, optimizing networks and to be more robust in those situations.
When I talked to Logitech, they blamed Eero. When I talked to Eero, they blamed Logitech.
Well, wouldn't you?
Of course.
At least they're not blaming you. Yeah, so that's good to know. So, yeah, if you're using a mesh, I don't, may just be Eero, I don't know. But did Logitech say this happens with other mesh systems?
I don't think so, but I think Eero at this point is probably the most widely used one.
Yeah, no, I agree.
So if you go on the Logitech board, you go on the Eero board, you'll see it all over the place. It does exactly what I'm seeing, which is hopping from node to node.
Oh, that's good to know.
Stable.
That's good to know. I just upgraded to the new Eero beacons, as you know, and I've been very happy with those. Big improvement because, of course, it's tri-band on the base. Which and they've got now 2x2 MIMO antennas, MU-MIMO as they call it. And in fact, I think it was you who told me that. Did you upgrade to the beacon, or are you just reading about it?
No, I've got the ones. The question, if we got have time, is it that much better? It's worth me sitting there and scrapping all my old.
No, way too expensive to do that.
Yeah. The only thing I thought I might do is put in a couple of the plugins, like up to the third floor where we've got coverage. Not the world's greatest. I know with the old Eero one, if you had too many of the spots, the signal degraded. Do you have the problem with the beacons?
Yep. No. Well, not yet. And in fact, the beacons cover are giving me better coverage than the original Eeros because I had to end up getting 5 Eeros in our house because it's kind of spread out. And I do it fine with a base station and 2 beacons. By the way, one more thing from Time in our chat room. Brother makes a straight through laser jet for $334 on Newegg, this color MFC 9330 CDW. Those are Brother makes good inexpensive lasers. He says it has a straight through path. You'll have to check to see if it does the size you want. But there's
okay, great. Yeah, I'm in the chat room.
Yeah, you can see Time's post. Hey, thank you, Dr. Mom.
Well, thank you.
Have a great day. Take care.
You too. Bye.
Bye. Steve, North Hollywood. I got about a minute left. Hi, Steve.
Hey, good to talk to you, Leo. I'll get to the point because I know you have not much time left. But what happened with my phone is the micro SD card, it maxed out while I was videotaping. I was at Roger Waters concert the other night.
Oh, you went to Us and Them? Oh, yeah. Man, I'm so jealous. Everybody in our staff has been except me.
Yeah?
I was out of the country when he was in town.
Oh, bummer.
Yeah. How many times have you seen it, John? You've seen it 5 times? John's seen it 5 times. He's a bit of a fan. So you, of course, you were videotaping this amazing, amazing concert.
And lo and behold, I only had very little. I videotaped just a snippet, but then when I got home, I realized that I overwrote the files.
Oh, that shouldn't happen.
It maxed out the SD drive, and now I can't access it. It just tells me it's not recognizing it, and I don't know. I had a friend run some software.
So, Recova is the one from Piriform, P-I-R-I-F-O-R-M. I recommend for not just SD cards, but any kind of data recovery. R-E-C-U-V-A. It's free. And if it can't do it, then you may have lost it forever. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great Geek Week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time. That's a bummer. That's bad behavior on the camera phone's part, though. Shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I'm so sorry. Yeah, did your friend try to use recovery software? Sounds like he did.
He did try to run. You know, he's a computer geek. He tried to run some programs that he had had access to, and he couldn't seem to pull anything off of it. And he said, "Well, you may want to try taking it to Verizon or something. Maybe that."
No, they're not going to do anything different. In fact,
yeah.
If you want to try it yourself, Recuva, R-E-C-U-V-A, is free. Yeah. But I tell you what, if nothing sees it,
yeah. It's not seeing the root files or whatever.
Yeah, it's probably not. It's probably something besides what you did. It's probably the card died.
Yeah, the weird thing is they'll give you a warning when you're coming up, you know.
Yeah, I don't think it. I think you're misdiagnosing it. I don't think really? You filled the card up too much. I think the card died. They do, you know.
Oh, yeah. I've had that happen before.
Yeah.
Not on a SD card, but on one of my thumb drives.
Yeah. Though this is the same technology, the flash technology. So absolutely can happen. And then what you'll see is nothing. It'll be a brick.
Yeah, it's crazy. It looks like it's a full drive. It looks like, you know, the pi circle. It's just completely blue or whatever.
Yeah. You know what? I don't think you filled up the card. I think it died.
I think it's just, wow.
I'm so sorry.
Well, it does give you the option to try to reformat it, but I know if I do that, I'm going to lose all the data.
Yeah, so make sure you've gone through every option. And the truth is, why reformat it? If it's a flaky card, throw it out. They're not expensive
to
replace.
Yeah, that's what I think, you know. Yeah, they're so cheap.
Yeah, so I'd save it. Keep trying to recover it. There's another program I've recommended for years, PC Inspector. That's pcinspector.de. It's designed specifically for SD cards. I don't know if that makes a difference, but it's another one you could try.
Yeah. I know you can pay the big bucks to have the...
They won't. They can't recover that. They can't recover that. The spinning drive they can, but they can't recover that. That's shot.
Yeah. Well, you say, you live and learn, right?
do you think... Yeah. I mean, there's nothing to learn except that, you know, cards die.
Back up your data, yeah.
Yeah, back... I hope you have backups of the other stuff.
I had backups of a lot of stuff. There was some photos and stuff. I didn't have backups on that.
Oh, crap.
It's not a big deal, but, you know, you start going... I wonder what was on that thing.
Yeah, next time install Google Photos because every photo you take is backed up immediately, and that way you don't ever have to think about it.
Yeah, I think with the company I work for too, we have Google Drive or something like that.
Oh yeah, take advantage of that. But Google Photos is free.
Google Photos.
Every smartphone should have Google Photos on it because it you make sure you turn on the backup and have it back up, and that way you'll never lose a photo.
Yeah, that's a good suggestion. I have an iPhone and an Android. Android for work and an iPhone I use for... I haven't used the Google backups.
All of the above for Google Photos. It's a great program. And that way, you wouldn't have to...
You don't have an issue like this. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, cards do die. I've had SD cards die on me. It's not common, but it's not impossible.